everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Lord of the Rings AMA podcast. My name is Matthias Austin, and on this podcast, I invite you to ask me anything about Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, or anything related to the greater legendarium of J.R.R. Tolkien, and I will do my best to give you as in-depth an answer as I can. And if you want to submit a question, you can email me at lotramapod@gmail.com. And I gotta be honest, I would really appreciate your emails, because after this episode, I am fully out of questions. So if you have any questions at all, even small ones, send them my way, and I can put them together into like a mailbag episode if I get enough. Or, you know, maybe send me ideas about what I should do on weeks where I don't have questions. I've had so much fun making this podcast, I really want to keep it going, so send in whatever you got. And another way you could help out, if you don't have any questions but just like the show, if you haven't yet left a 5-star review, it would really be helpful if you could. I don't understand the mystery of how the algorithm actually works, but I know that the more ratings and reviews you get, the more likely it is that it will come up for people when they search Lord of the Rings. And so anyway, enough of my begging. Let's get to today's question from Hope in Chicago. Hope asks, Hope from Chicago here. Love the pod. Thank you. Goblins are goblins. Orcs are tortured elves, right? But what are the Uruk-hai? We see in the Fellowship of the Ring that they are sort of born out of mud. Were they meant to be an improvement on orcs? Do they only serve Saruman while orcs serve Sauron? Well, thank you, Hope, for that series of questions. The question of goblins, orcs, and Uruk-hai, and where they all come from, is one that has confused readers since the Fellowship of the Ring was first published. It's even a question that plagued Tolkien himself, as the origin of orcs is something he never really landed on, leaving later generations, notably his son Christopher when he compiled the Silmarillion, and eventually Peter Jackson, Fran Walsh, Philippa Boyens, when they made the films, left them in a position where they had to kind of just settle on the most complete version of orcish origins, even if it went against where Tolkien likely would have ended up. Now, we're going to get into all of that later, so let's first start with the differences between goblins, orcs, and Uruks. And as a bonus, I'm also going to throw in something that Hope didn't mention, half-orcs that were crossbreeds between orcs and humans. Now, the shortest version of the answer is this. There is no difference between a goblin and an orc, and Uruks are just bigger and better orcs. Now, here's the longer version. The term goblin is primarily used in The Hobbit, and orc is used primarily in The Lord of the Rings. And this has led to the belief out there that they're different things, a thought I actually believed for a really long time. And I think this was exacerbated by the films, because the term goblin is used by Legolas in Moria. He says, oh, goblins, as the Fellowship is being surrounded before the Balrog arrives. And the goblins of Moria look smaller, paler, almost slimier in a way than the other orcs we see in the trilogy. Now, this has led me to believe, for a long time, like I said, that goblins lived in the mountains, sort of wild and under the control of no one, or like the Goblin King from The Hobbit, while orcs came from Moria, and Saruman had the bigger Uruk-hai at Isengard. But the truth is that they are mostly synonymous. Tolkien wrote a letter to Naomi Mitchison in 1954, where he answered many of her questions she had about the Fellowship of the Ring. But for our purposes today, the important part says this. Tolkien wrote, Orcs, the word is as far as I am concerned, derived primarily from Old English, orc, demon, but only because of its phonetic suitability, are nowhere clearly stated to be of any particular origin. But since they are servants of the Dark Power and later of Sauron, neither of whom could or would produce living things, they must be corruptions. They are not based on direct experience of mind, but, oh, I suppose, a good deal to the goblin tradition. Goblin is used as a translation in The Hobbit, where orc only occurs once, I think. Especially as it appears in George MacDonald, except for the soft feet, which I never believed in. And my note here, as Matthias, I don't know what that's referring to, but anyway, Tolkien goes on. The name has the form orch, O-R-C-H, and the plural is yurch, Y-R-C-H, in Sindarin, language of the elves, and Uruk in the black speech. So goblins are orcs, and Uruk is orcish for orc. So there you go, they're all kind of the same thing. And there are instances where goblin, orc, and Uruk are used almost interchangeably in The Lord of the Rings. After the Fellowship, now without Gandalf, leave Moria and enter Lothlorien, Gimli says this. I'm not going to do the voice, I'm just going to read what it says. "Not a sound but the wind," he said. "There are no goblins near, or my ears are made of wood. It is to be hoped that the orcs will be content with driving us from Moria. And maybe that was all their purpose, for they had nothing else to do with us, with the ring. Though orcs will often pursue foes for many leagues into the plain, if they have a fallen captain to avenge." So in like two sentences right there, Gimli calls them both orcs and goblins. So why are goblins used so much more frequently than orc in The Hobbit? Well, it had to do with the intended audience. The Hobbit is, at its core, a story for children. I think Tolkien would technically categorize it as a fairy tale, whereas the Lord of the Rings is intended for adults. Now, kids have an idea of goblin. They can picture something if you say goblin, especially like 90 or so years ago when Grimm's fairy tales were the norm. But if a 7-year-old read orc, they'd have no idea what to picture. Now, granted, most adults don't speak Old English, so most of them had probably never seen the word orc either, thus the letters and Tolkien having to explain it. Sometimes it's important to stop and remember that Tolkien was not really an author. He was a philologist who happened to write genre-defining stories, and he's just immersed in Old English, and we kind of just have to ride that out. So, yes, goblins are orcs, and Uruk is just what orcs call themselves, in the same way that elves call themselves Quendi, and dwarves call themselves Khazad. But what are the Uruk-hai? The literal translation is orc folk, hai being orcish for folk, which could mean all orcs, but it seems that the usage amongst orcs themselves reserved the term for a breed of orcs that were stronger, faster, and more able to deal with the sunlight than other orcs. The first reference to orcs fitting this description comes from The History of Middle-earth, compiled by Christopher Tolkien, Tolkien's son, Volume 12, The Peoples of Middle-earth, where Tolkien is giving this extended history of Gondor, and he writes that during the reign of Denethor I, which is an ancestor of the Denethor that we see in The Lord of the Rings, it says, "The Morgul lords, who are Nazgul, having bred in secret a fell race of black orcs in Mordor, assail Ithilien and overrun it." Now, I assume here that black orcs is not referring to the color of their skin, but rather the way that Tolkien usually used the term to refer to, like, evil. And I also do acknowledge that the usage of black to represent evil and white to represent good, yeah, that probably has some questionable historical origins, and it emboldens people to carry that over into racial politics, that terminology. But I am not sure that Tolkien could be said to have held those beliefs. I would be happy to do a whole episode on whether Tolkien is problematic or not, but it's too big of a topic to fit into this episode today, so I'm just going to leave it there. And all of that is to say that the Nazgul, likely at the behest of Sauron, began a breeding program to create better orcs. And this was eventually copied by Saruman when he created the Uruk-hai. The fact that he and Sauron were able to accomplish this shouldn't really come as a surprise. They were both Maia, who had worked for the Vala, Aule, the smith, the guy who created the dwarves. They'd worked for him long, long ago, and creating and crafting were their specialties. Saruman was able to improve on the eugenics, because it was eugenics. Saruman was able to improve on the eugenics of the Morgul lords and created orcs that were able to better withstand the sunlight, something that even the Mordor orcs weren't able to do. And they were the ones who proudly called themselves the Fighting Uruk-hai and were fiercely loyal to Saruman. The term actually possibly became a slur among other orcs, as we can see in The Return of the King. Sam and Frodo, they overhear two orcs discussing their escape from the Tower of Cirith Ungol. This is what they overhear. Again, I'm not doing the voices. "Whose blame's that?" said the soldier. "Not mine. That comes from higher up. First they say it's a great elf in bright armor. Then it's a sort of small dwarf man. Then it must be a pack of rebel Uruk-hai. Or maybe it's all the lot together." So, yes, while Uruk-hai could refer to all orcs, it is primarily used by the orcs bred by Saruman. But this is not the only eugenics program that Saruman underwent. Throughout The Lord of the Rings, we see references to strange folk appearing in the Shire and Bree and the other Northlands. Now, unfortunately, we're going to have to briefly touch again into the topic of is Tolkien problematic, because I can't describe these people without acknowledging that every time the primary descriptor we get of these strangers that are coming up from the south, it says that they are either squint or slant-eyed and either swarthy or sallow, meaning they either have a darker or a yellower complexion. Now, that sounds bad. So again, this is a much, much, much larger topic. And honestly, I'd love to have a guest in to talk about this, because it's probably out of my wheelhouse. It would require me to do a lot more research than I kind of have the time to do in a week. So if I could bring in a guest that knows more about this, that would be awesome. So if you know any Tolkien experts, send their info my way so I can reach out to them and I can do that topic justice. But the point is that there's this new group of people coming up from the south who are working for Saruman. After Isengard is captured by the Ents, we get this exchange between Merry and Aragorn. Merry says, "Most of them referring to the people that were at Isengard when the Ents arrived, were ordinary men, rather tall and dark-haired and grim, but not particularly evil-looking. But there were some others that were horrible, man-high but with goblin faces, sallow, leering, squint-eyed. Do you know, they reminded me at once of that southerner at Bree, only he was not so obviously orc-like as most of these were." "I thought of him too," said Aragorn. "We had many of these half-orcs to deal with at Helm's Deep. It seems plain now that the southerner was a spy of Saruman's, but whether he was working with the Black Riders or for Saruman alone, I do not know." And in The Return of the King, we see this in the chapter The Scouring of the Shire. "But in the village of Bywater, all the houses and holes were shut, and no one greeted them. They wondered at this, but they soon discovered the reason of it. When they reached the Green Dragon, the last house on the Hobbiton side, now lifeless and with broken windows, they were disturbed to see half a dozen large, ill-favored men lounging against the inn wall. They were squint-eyed and sallow-faced." "Like that friend of Bill Ferny's at Bree," said Sam. "Like many that I saw at Isengard," muttered Merry. And near the end of the chapter, we get this account of a battle between the hobbits and Saruman's forces that have taken over the Shire. "Behind, the trapped men in the lane, still about 80, tried to climb the barrier and the banks, and the hobbits were obliged to shoot many of them or hew them with axes. But many of the strongest and most desperate got out the west side and attacked their enemies fiercely, being now more bent on killing than escaping. Several hobbits fell, and the rest were wavering when Merry and Pippin, who were on the east side, came across and charged the ruffians. Merry himself slew the leader, a great squint-eyed brute like a huge orc. Then he drew his forces off, encircling the last remnant of the men in a wide ring of archers." So we have these references to men that are similar in stature and build and other physical characteristics to orcs. So who exactly are they? Well, in Volume 10 of the History of Middle-earth, called Morgoth's Ring, in a chapter called Myths Transformed, we see a lot of Tolkien's later notes as he was trying to clarify his mythology after The Lord of the Rings had been written. Now, it's important to note that had many of these notes been applied, like had he actually made the changes he was writing in these notes, it would have required significant rewrites to The Lord of the Rings, and especially to The Silmarillion. So take everything you're about to hear with a grain of salt. But on the subject of orcs, Tolkien wrote this. "It became clear in time that undoubted men could, under the domination of Morgoth or his agents in a few generations, be reduced almost to the orc level of mind and habits, and then they would or could be made to mate with orcs, producing new breeds, often larger and more cunning. There's no doubt that long afterwards, in the Third Age, Saruman rediscovered this, or learned of it in lore, and in his lust for mastery committed this, his wickedest deed. The interbreeding of orcs and men, producing both men-orcs large and cunning, and orc-men treacherous and vile. These may be separate beings than the fighting Uruk-hai, who could be pure orc, just like the black orcs of Mordor. Or they could be hybrids of men and orcs. Now, I'll be honest, in my research, I found that it isn't clear. Some believe that all of Saruman's Uruk-hai are half-orcs, and will use passages like this from the Two Towers to support that. But these creatures of Isengard, these half-orcs and goblin men that the foul craft of Saruman has bred, they will not quail at the sun, said Gamling, and neither will the wild men of the hills. Do you not hear their voices? So we know that half-orcs and goblin men, which again just means orc men, were in Saruman's forces at Helm's Deep. Are these the Uruk-hai, or are they something different? And the counterpoint to them being the same thing is that in the chapter The Uruk-hai, Aragorn, Éomer, and others refer to the titular Uruk-hai as orcs, while those at Isengard are always referred to as men, though men with orcish qualities. So I think I'm inclined to believe that the Uruk-hai are likely mostly, if not entirely, orcish, just bred to be larger, stronger, and able to deal with the sun, while these half-orcs and orc men we hear about are closer to being like half and half, or possibly more man than orc, in order to blend into human societies. I'm going to return to Hope's question briefly to recap where we are right now. Goblins and orcs are the same. Uruk-hai may or may not be crossbred orcs and humans, but they're definitely more orcish. Now, Hope mentioned in the movies that them being birthed from the mud. I think this was an artistic choice to keep a PG-13 rating because all indications are that orcs reproduce biologically. Now, I think I've addressed most of Hope's questions, except for one detail. Hope, in her question, said, "Orcs are tortured elves, right?" And it turns out that answer is far, far, far more complicated than I thought before I started researching this question. Because the original origin of orcs is highly debatable, as Tolkien just kept changing his mind. Now, on the surface, it seems straightforward. In the movies, Saruman says, "Do you know how the orcs first came into being? They were elves once, taken by the dark powers, tortured and mutilated, a ruined and terrible form of life." Now, this likely comes from the description that we're given in the Silmarillion, though not officially, because Peter Jackson didn't have the rights to use it, but in the Silmarillion, it says this. And just for context, this is going to be a reference to like when the Vala Orome first encounters the elves, who call themselves Quendi, in Quivienin. And if that sounded like gibberish, go check out episode 6, the Elvish Explanation Extravaganza episode. But this is what the Silmarillion says. It's kind of long, so bear with me. "Yet many of the Quendi were filled with dread at his coming, and this was the doing of Melkor. For by afterknowledge the wise declare that Melkor, ever watchful, was first aware of the awakening of the Quendi, and sent shadows and evil spirits to spy upon them and waylay them. So it came to pass, some years ere the coming of Orome, that if any of the elves strayed far abroad, alone or few together, they would often vanish and never return. And the Quendi said that the hunter had caught them, and they were afraid. And indeed the most ancient songs of the elves, of which echoes are remembered still in the west, tell of the shadow shapes that walked in the hills above Quivienin, or would pass suddenly over the stars, and of the dark rider upon his wild horse that pursued those that wandered to take them and devour them. Now Melkor greatly hated and feared the riding of Orome, and either he sent indeed his dark servants as riders, or he set lying whispers abroad, for the purposes that the Quendi should shun Orome if ever they should meet. Thus it was that when Orome indeed came among them, some of the Quendi hid themselves, and some fled and were lost. But those that had courage and stayed perceived swiftly that the great rider was no shape out of darkness, for the light of Aman was in his face, and all the noblest of the elves were drawn towards it. But of those unhappy ones who were ensnared by Melkor, little is known of a certainty. For who of the living has descended into the pits of Autumno, or has explored the darkness of the councils of Melkor? Yet this is held true by the wise of Eressëa. That's a location in Valinor. Technically outside of Valinor, it's an island. Don't worry about it. Yet this is held true by the wise of Eressëa, that all those of the Quendi who came into the hands of Melkor, ere Autumno was broken, were put there in prison, and by slow arts of cruelty were corrupted and enslaved. And thus did Melkor breed the hideous race of the orcs in envy and mockery of the elves, of whom they were afterwards the bitterest foes. For the orcs had life and multiplied after the manner of the children of Iluvatar, and naught that had life of its own, nor the semblance of life, could ever Melkor make since his rebellion, before the beginning. So say the wise. And deep in their dark hearts the orcs loathed the master whom they served in fear, the maker only of their misery. This, it may be, was the vilest deed of Melkor, and the most hateful to Iluvatar. So that seems straightforward, right? Morgoth captured early elves, and he twisted them into orcs. Well, in later notes than the one that sort of set up that story, Tolkien wrote this. Though as for orcs, the Eldar believed Morgoth had actually bred them by capturing men and elves early and increasing the utmost any corrupt tendencies they possessed. So suddenly men are now involved in the equation, and Tolkien is adjusting his mythology. And he did this frequently, and he went back and forth about orcs for the rest of his life. And the reason why he did this is because his mythological framework was very rigid. See, in the mythology, only good, Iluvatar ultimately, and the Valar kind of, can create. Evil can only corrupt. So while it would be easier to say, Melkor then went and created the orcs, it would break the continuity he had made. He was, in his mind, creating a world, not writing a story, and therefore the rules that, you know, he made up were unbreakable. At one point in his process, he even toyed with the idea that orcs were actually descended from Maiar, that angelic order of beings that worked for the Valar. And his theory with that was that while Melkor, or Morgoth, same thing, could corrupt a being, he didn't have the power to make that corruption hereditary. But there were other Maia who had offspring, like themselves, when they were in a physical body. So Melian gave birth to Luthien. Thorondor, the first of the great eagles, the ultimate ancestor of the eagles we see in The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. Ents and Entwives had Entings. So, you know, Maia, when they're in physical form, can reproduce. And so maybe corrupted or evil Maia took the form of orcs, and they were able to procreate that way. But Tolkien eventually abandoned that idea too. He never really followed through with it. And he briefly considered that maybe orcs could have been like the earliest dwarves, mere extensions of Morgoth's will with no life of their own. But if that were the case, they wouldn't have been able to exist after Morgoth was overthrown at the end of the First Age. And before you ask, Sauron couldn't have just stepped in and taken over that control, because we see orcs actively bad-mouthing Sauron and expressing a desire to abandon him in the Two Towers. This is the conversation that Sam overhears these two orcs having. "No, I don't know," said Gorbag's voice. "The messages go through quicker than anything could fly, as a rule. But I don't inquire how it's done. Safest not to. Gah, those Nazgul give me the creeps. And they skin the body off of you as soon as look at you, and leave you all cold in the dark on the other side. But he being Sauron, likes them. They're his favorites nowadays, so it's no use grumbling. I tell you, it's no game serving down in the city." "You should try being up here with Shelob for company," said Shagrat. "I'd like to try somewhere where there's none of them. But the war's on now, and when that's over, things may be easier." "It's going well, they say." "They would," grunted Gorbag. "We'll see. But anyway, if it does go well, there should be a lot more room. What do you say? If we get a chance, you and me'll slip off and set up somewhere on our own with a few trusty lads, somewhere where there's good loot nice and handy, and no big bosses." And then later, Shagrat and Gorbag would actually lead their, like, little gangs to attack each other and wipe each other out. So This is hardly the actions of those who are under the complete control of the Dark Lord. So orcs must have wills of their own. So the only options really are they're descended from elves, men, or Maia as their origin. For some reason, dwarves never come up in any of Tolkien's writings. Except that even with it being elves, men, and Maia, Tolkien wasn't sure about that. He toyed around with the idea that they were in, like, bodies created by Melkor, but the souls were of elves and men that were captured and forced into them. He toyed around with the idea that they were, like, just, like, really smart animals that could learn language like parrots, but, again, that didn't really seem to make sense to him either. And you may be wondering, well, who cares? Why does he spend all of this time worrying about the origins of orcs? Well, the reason for all of this back and forth was because the orcs represented something of a theological nightmare for Tolkien. See, if they were merely corrupted men and elves, being with souls, and fea is the term in elf for elvish for soul, fea, what happens when they die? Do their souls or fea go to the halls of Mandos, where they will be rebodied? See, the problem with that is that within Tolkien's theology, the body-soul relationship with elves was unchangeable. It was immutable. Each soul, or fea, belonged to a specific body, or roa. For instance, Glorfindel died in the First Age fighting a Balrog. His fea went back to Valinor to the halls of Mandos. Then his roa was remade exactly as it was. His fea entered it, and he was Glorfindel again, exactly as he had been before he died. And then they sent him back to aid Elrond and the elves in the Second and Third Ages. So what happens about an orc dying who only had the roa, the body, of an orc, but the fea within it is a corrupted elf? There's no body to be remade. The Valar aren't going to start putting orcs in Valinor, and you can't have an unhoused fea. That is an abomination. So the fea of a human isn't bound to its body, so maybe when a human dies, their soul leaves the earth, leaves Middle-earth. Goes somewhere else, the Timeless Halls. So it could make sense within the theology for orcs to have been made from men. You don't have the fea roa issue there. Except that the first accounts of orcs within the history that Tolkien had wrote predate the awakening of humans. And additionally, what are the moral ramifications for our heroes? See, we see thousands of orcs killed in battle. Two of the Fellowship, Gimli and Legolas, they even make a game out of who can kill the most at Helm's Deep. If the orcs are beings with souls, just corruptions of elves or men, then the desire to wipe them out is, and there's no other word for it, genocidal. And fantasy authors after Tolkien have really kind of leaned into this, and so the genre often has these wars against irredeemable evil armies that just get wiped out and annihilated, and no one gives it a second thought. But Tolkien did not revel in war. He wrote about it, but he didn't like it. Throughout his writings, it's clear that he views war as an evil. Maybe a sometimes necessary evil, but evil nonetheless. We get this in The Two Towers, when Sam sees a fallen soldier who was one of the armies of Sauron. It says, "It was Sam's first view of a battle of men against men, and he did not like it much. He was glad that he could not see the dead face. He wondered what the man's name was and where he came from, and if he really was evil at heart, or what lies or threats had led him on the long march from his home, and if he would really rather have stayed there in peace." All in a flash of thought, which was quickly driven from his mind. See, Sam forgets because an Oliphant shows up and he gets distracted by that. But he spends his time going, "Oh, this guy, wouldn't he rather have been at home? Was he threatened to be in here? Was he coerced?" And in the aftermath of that battle, Faramir says this: "War must be while we defend our lives against a destroyer who would devour all. But I do not love the bright sword for its sharpness, nor the arrow for its swiftness, nor the warrior for his glory. I love only that which they defend." And this perspective on war and killing and death makes complete sense when you remember that Tolkien fought in the trenches of World War I, and most of his friends were killed on the battlefield. Now, he wasn't a pacifist. He was certainly proud of his service and the service of his son in World War II, But that didn't mean he believed that war and death were things to celebrate. And throughout the books, we see the human allies of Sauron surrendering after defeats, and they're treated pretty well. But it's never that case with the orcs. Either the orcs refused to surrender, or they were pursued until they were all slain. A fact that it was written in print and needed to be part of the worldview because that was in the published Lord of the Rings, and it was something that Tolkien just never felt comfortable with. It seemed that as time went on, he leaned more and more into the idea that orcs were corrupted men. That seemed to fix the theology. And that all the early statements about elves were a misunderstanding by the elves, which is a clever if unconvincing bit of retconning. The most completed version of the story continues to be that orcs were elves, and the theological and ethical ramifications would have to remain ultimately unresolved. I'm going to end with a last little bit of trivia about the changing nature of orcs, which is that Tolkien was so turned around on the topic of orcs, he even decided in the late 60s, well after The Lord of the Rings was published, that he wanted to change the spelling from orc with a C to O-R-K, because he thought people would be confused when reading the word orcish with a C and pronounce it orcish. Now, had he followed through on that, ORC orcs might have been limited to just early editions of The Lord of the Rings, and the show about Mork from Ork would have been a very different vibe, though Robin Williams would make a tremendous Uruk-hai. Well, there you go, Hope. I hope that answers your question about goblins, Uruk-hai, and orcs and their origins. If you got turned around by any of that or confused, just know that you're in good company. Tolkien couldn't really figure it out either. And if you, like Hope, would like to submit a question, email it to lotramapod@gmail.com. As I said up top, I'm not sure what next week's going to look like yet, so send anything you have on my way. Don't forget to leave the 5-star rating and review. Follow me on Instagram and Threads. I'm at lotramapod on both. Links are in the show notes. Thank you, as always, to Michael for our music and Lauren for our artwork. And that's all for this week. Iluvatar and your emails willing, I'll hopefully be back next week. See you then.